Amusing Ourselves to Death, Public Discourse in the Age of Show Business, 20th Anniversary Edition, by Neil Postman, Penguin, 2005, 183 pages. A brief book summary from Books at a Glance. Summary. Chapter 1. The Medium is the Metaphor. In America's history, different cities at different times have served to represent the whole spirit of the nation. Today, Las Vegas occupies that place, since it is a city devoted to entertainment, and we are on the verge of amusing ourselves to death. Currently, every area of public discourse, including religion, news, and politics, takes the form of entertainment. Politicians and news anchors must have stylists. The unattractive are barred from public office or delivering the news. The quality of material goods is of secondary importance compared to how they can be displayed. Human conversation requires forms, and forms limit how conveniently we can express an idea. This convenience of expression, in turn, determines what will be the most important topics in a culture. For example, smoke signals do not allow for in-depth philosophical analysis and argument. So, using the form of smoke signals rules out nuanced philosophical exchange. With television, the visual medium magnifies the importance of image and minimizes the value of intellectual content. As the age of the written word wanes, the age of visual imaging rises, and our content is cast into a form that is most suitable for television. The media of communication in a culture are a dominant influence in shaping that culture's intellectual and social priorities. A message is a specific statement about the world. A metaphor makes powerful connections about reality. TV is not a medium that is a message, since it is not making a specific statement about the way things are. What it does is give us a way of seeing and framing the world and experience. It gives us a suggestion of the way the world is. Oral cultures and written cultures are very different and understand communication very differently. For cultures without writing, the introduction of words frozen in time, addressed to nobody and everybody, which could raise questions that couldn't be asked of the communicator, written to an unknown audience, etc., is difficult to process. The difference between writing and speaking is obvious. The introduction of a new technology like writing can transform our thinking and hence change the content of our culture. Our conversations are conducted according to the language and media we have available to conveniently express content. The content of our culture is shaped by the metaphors we use. Chapter 2. Media as Epistemology. With the great media metaphor shift in American culture, much of our public discourse has become dangerous nonsense. The problem with television is not its junk content that is known to be trivial. It is when it postures as sophisticated and as a carrier of important cultural conversations that it is genuinely problematic. It is important to recognize that the concepts of truth are tied to culturally accepted or preferred modes of communication. For example, in academics, the written word published in books is taken as a higher authority than oral statements. In ancient Greece, rhetoric was not seen as adornment for the truth. It was seen as a necessary vehicle for identifying truth. Some cultures find truth in stories, whereas others put story and poetry far below counting and quantifying. Only numbers and measurements are taken to tell the truth. There are some ways of communicating and recognizing truth that are better than others, particularly in specific fields. But moving from media of communication, speaking, writing, reading, television, ideas of truth change. In an oral culture, intelligence centers around the memory capacity and the ability to communicate deep ideas in pithy, memorable forms, like proverbs. In a book culture, intelligence is identified in different ways. To read a book well makes incredible demands on the individual's physical and mental concentration. In reading, we navigate numerous subtle and technical requirements without noticing that we are doing so. For a reading culture, mastering these techniques and challenges is the mark of intelligence. My argument is limited to saying that a major new medium changes the structure of the discourse. It does so by encouraging certain uses of the intellect, by favoring certain definitions of intelligence and wisdom, and by demanding a certain kind of content. In a phrase, by creating new forms of truth-telling. Compared to print media, television is vastly inferior, dangerous, and absurd. There is still reading in our culture, but it occupies a diminished place far under the influence of television. For entertainment and other purposes, TV may be positive, but as a shaper of public discourse, it is disastrous. Chapter 3. Typographic America. In the autobiography of Benjamin Franklin, there appears a fascinating quotation from a leader of a religious sect known as the Dunkers. The Dunkers had been widely scoffed at, and Franklin suggested they put their beliefs in writing to set the record straight. One of their leaders replied that they didn't want to commit their views to writing, since they were growing and discerning truth and error, and they didn't want subsequent followers to think their written records now were the authoritative guide to what they should believe. In contrast to the Dunkers, the people who settled in the New World prized books and writing. They saw reading as the pathway to knowledge and liberty, and they imported enormous number of books and started numerous schools. Reading was not an elitist activity, and everyone who read could participate in public debates. Thomas Paine was a phenomenally best-selling author, but he had little formal education. Nevertheless, nobody doubted that a common man could have such a powerful way of expressing himself, or that his thoughts couldn't be worth hearing. In America, newspapers and pamphlets exploded in popularity, such that the same knowledge and information that fueled conversations was available to every home. This type of print media became more widely informative than books for most people. All different classes read newspapers, and the same was true for popular novels. International visitors to America in the 1800s were often amazed at how literary society was. Lectures were also very popular, and the lecture content and style were based on the written word. It is important to remember that the dominance of the written word was due to its monopoly. There was no television, or radio, or audio recordings. The linear and analytical nature of expository prose affected the thinking and conversation patterns of Americans. Many speeches, lectures, and sermons were delivered orally, but were actually written out first. Chapter 4. The Typographic Mind. In the 1850s, Abraham Lincoln and Stephen Douglas engaged in debates that could last up to 7 hours. They would present their arguments for extended periods of time and then have extended periods for rebuttal. The complexity of their syntax, the precision of their language and argument, and the attention span and comprehension of the audiences is virtually unimaginable today. The orators wrote out their speeches and rebuttal points ahead of time, and their speech bears all the marks of the written word. Those who heard were able to process such speech patterns through the ear because they lived in a culture that was formed by typography. In short, the Lincoln-Douglas debates may be described as expository prose lifted whole from the printed page. This kind of language and form is used to convey propositional content. It guides the mind in considering an idea. Language-centered discourse of this kind, found in the 1800s, tends to convey serious content, especially when in print. Since the author does not know the reader, the written sentence must be clear and understandable, and it must be taken as important. Reading is a serious and rational activity. A culture that is dominated by print presents and studies claims in a logical, coherent order. Analysis is part of the cultural mindset. Where this is the case, public discourse engages seriously with meaningful content. This was seen in all spheres of social life, including religion. The sermons of Jonathan Edwards were written and read, and they were intellectually rigorous. theological discussions utilized rational analysis and carefully articulated exposition. Looking at that kind of past religious engagement and at the present religious landscape, the differences are stark. We find the same reality when we compare the legal profession of the past with the legal profession today. It was expected of lawyers working in such a culture that they would have a keen grasp of language, logic, and clarity of thought and expression, as well as having a wide general knowledge from broad reading. In commerce and commercial advertising, marketers assumed that their potential customers were rational and analytical. Until near the end of the 1800s, advertising relied on conveying information and propositions in words for a customer's rational analysis. It aimed at the understanding rather than the emotions. After this time, advertising began to use pictures, slogans, and jingles, relying on aesthetics and psychology. In the past, most people would not have recognized the president, but they knew the president's views from his writing. Today, most people know what the president looks like, but they know almost none of his words. This is the difference between an image-centered culture and a word-centered culture. This age of exposition was replaced by the age of show business. Chapter 5: The Peekaboo World. In moving away from the typographic age, the telegraph played a major role in changing how communication occurred. Prior to the telegraph, news traveled as fast as people in ships or trains could move. The telegraph made fast communication possible between places geographically distant, but it also constrained the kinds of information that could be communicated. News used to provide functional information, but it moved to irrelevance and curiosity, bringing sensational stories to those who had no need for them. Decontextualized information was sent to people all over the nation and world who could make no practical use of it. How much information do we come across in news today that helps us solve a practical problem or causes us to change our plans for the day? Information in oral and typographical cultures help people perform actions. Today, the information we access is largely decoupled from action. Books represent thought-out and gathered information that needs to be read, evaluated, and analyzed. Whereas the telegraph only communicated information that was up-to-date and immediately replaced without time for thought. The telegraph privileged knowing of things without knowing anything about them. Added to the telegraph was the invention of photography, which presents a particular rather than universals, and an object rather than an idea. Words can be taken out of context, but a photograph always extracts an image from its content. Photos put an image to the items of the news feed, and thus the recipient now had an image to go with the tidbits of information. Since the information received is irrelevant and impotent in helping people take meaningful action, pseudo-contexts were invented where such information could seem to serve a purpose. Crossword puzzles and trivia games were the place where such things seemed to matter. In other words, the only function of this information was to amuse. The telegraph and photography created a peekaboo world where one thing flashes, vanishes, and is immediately replaced. There is nothing wrong with entertainment, unless we try to live in that space. And this is where we have ended up with television. Television frames things in particular ways, but we rarely talk about television. We only talk about what's on it. Chapter 6: The Age of Show Business. Television is an extension of the telegraph and photography, not a development of the printing press. Television is a technology and a medium. A technology is a physical apparatus, and the medium is the purpose to which the technology is put. Machines, technologies, create social and intellectual environments, the medium. Programming and commercials on television are designed to keep the eye moving from one image to the next, The goal is emotional rather than rational. The problem is not that television presents us with entertaining subject matter, but that all subject matter is presented as entertaining, which is another issue altogether. No matter what is put on television, the assumption is that it is there to entertain us. Even the news is clearly packaged for entertainment and not being taken too seriously. When discussions by experts take place on television, there is no time given for thinking before responding or questioning sources. Thinking is not of interest when it is being watched. It is not a performance, and television requires performance to hold attention. Television aims to elicit applause rather than reflection. A sustained, deep conversation about complex issues does not play well on TV. What people want in programming is lots of moving pictures. There's a reason it is called television. People may buy a record to listen to music, but not to learn other information. In contrast, TV has become the medium that we turn to for every kind of information we get. The way, therefore, that TV stages the world is the way we think it should be staged. People used to exchange ideas, and now they exchange images. Unlike Lincoln and Douglas, now in debates, the candidates are given mere minutes to make a statement on a complex subject and only seconds to offer a rebuttal. Rather than try to provide a substantive answer, the candidates try to create impressions. Presidential candidates may win an entire debate by having a great one-liner. Instead of demonstrating expertise in their field, it is now more important to excel in showmanship if you want to lead the world. Chapter 7. Now, this. The phrase, now, this, is a new part of grammar that, instead of connecting things together, disconnects everything from everything else. It signifies that what is about to follow has no significance connected to what just passed, and that whatever you have just seen is not important enough to continue thinking about, given the next thing to see, whatever that is. Nothing is serious enough for sustained consideration. TV aims to attract the largest audience possible, and that means hiring the most attractive and entertaining people, even for news. It is of essential importance that they create an impression of being trustworthy and credible. News anchors report the news without any real display of emotion or understanding. They cannot be afraid, even if the news is terrifying. A report about the possibility of nuclear war is followed by a break for a fast food commercial. This incoherent juxtaposing teaches people that the news cannot be serious, and it reveals that there's no interest in treating any issue seriously. No person or issue can take up more than a minute of time. There must be constant movement into novelty and change. News is packaged as a variety show with celebrity hosts and characters for weather and sports. I do not mean to imply that television news deliberately aims to deprive Americans of a coherent contextual understanding of their world. I mean to say that when news is packaged as entertainment, that is the inevitable result. News entertains, but it doesn't inform. But since we think we are being informed, we are, ironically, confusing being ignorant with being knowledgeable. Contradiction is not alarming to people because it cannot exist when every context is discontinuous. What a president said then may be the opposite of what they say now, but the past is old news, and there's no connection between now and then. Today, incoherence is taken for granted, and people are amused into indifference. This is not a situation controlled by an Orwellian regime. It is the vision of Huxley in Brave New World. Television is influencing all other media forms, including newspapers, so that all information content reflects the style of TV packaging. Chapter 8. Shuffle Off to Bethlehem. There is a lot of religious programming on television, and it is all presented, without apology, as entertainment. Everything sacred is stripped away. There is no meditation, dogma, or transcendence. The preacher, rather than God, is the star. Television simply cannot communicate the essence of some things. To make some things fit for television alters them. Changing the means and method of delivery changes content and social meaning. Religious services require sacred space, and television cannot be consecrated. The room in which the program is viewed is also unconsecrated. The atmosphere is identical for what is profane. Television carries a host of associations with secular programming, continuous commercials, and always the possibility of shutting it off or changing the channel. Like any other programming, the goal is to attract a large audience. Televised messages cannot engage complex ideas. They must be user-friendly. Rather than tell people what they need, people must feel that they are being offered what they want, or they will stop watching. Christianity is a serious religion, and when it is cast in an easy and amusing way, it becomes something other than itself. The camera work and visual packaging of a TV program focuses on the preacher more than on God. It has the power to make a graven image. God is unseen, but television focuses on what is visible. Religion can be made entertaining, but can it survive as itself when this happens? Chapter 9. Reach out and elect someone. Politics is now show business, where the main goal is to win a crowd and popularity. And this is done through managing appearance and image. In this, politics has been influenced by commercials, advertising used to be conducted in words that expressed propositions. But now, it is done by images and impressions. Since these make no claims, they cannot be true or false, just liked or disliked. Instead of focusing on the quality of the product, advertising focuses on the psychology of the consumer. Political candidates know that their commercial image is more important than their substantive grasp of issues. Commercials are an exceptionally short presentation in which there is no time for nuance, complexity, thought, or articulation. Seeing tens of thousands of commercials per year, people come to share in the epistemology of simple, rapid, easy solutions to everything. Television makes it impossible for us to know who the best candidate is, because it only projects the candidate as an image rather than demonstrating their competence, experience, capabilities, skills, knowledge, etc. Great commercials offer slogans and symbols that viewers use to shape an image of themselves, and this is now what politicians offer the public. Politicians are chosen because they work on us psychologically, not because of their political substance. In some countries, history and information is controlled by Orwellian censorship. But in America, there is no need for Big Brother. As in Huxley's vision, people are too content with their amusement to worry about history and ideas. TV, rather than the government, controls our discourse. It does not forbid reading or actively ban books. It displaces them. Chapter 10. Teaching as an amusing activity. Many people embraced Sesame Street because they thought it would teach children to love school. But it only taught children to love school if it was like a television show, thus undermining traditional education. A classroom is a social space where there are standards of behavior, mandatory attendance, questions can be asked, etc. And none of this is true of TV. Of critical importance, school focused on language development and reading, but TV focuses on images. Dewey correctly noted that how we learn may have a longer and more profound impact than a lesson's content. TV dominates young people's time, attention, and mental habits, so it controls their education. Without any historical precedent in the philosophy of education, television's contribution is that education and entertainment are inseparable. For television, there must be no prerequisites that keep someone from watching a show. Knowledge is not built successively on a foundation. Nothing can perplex the viewer, or they will change the channel. Exposition, which must include rational analysis, reasons, refutations, evidence, etc., must be avoided like the plague. Numerous studies report that television is far inferior to print for transmitting information that is stored and remembered by the learner. Reading is much better for training inferential thinking. Nonetheless, there are massive, well-funded projects to shape the delivery of classroom content with videos and television programming, bringing in books as guides to the TV shows. Chapter 11. The Huxleyan Warning. In Orwell, culture becomes a prison, but in Huxley, it becomes a burlesque. In Huxley, Big Brother does not watch over us. We choose to watch him. By moving away from print culture to the dominance of television, America is providing the first glimpse of how Huxley's vision can be actualized. We are prepared to take arms against a sea of troubles, but not a sea of amusements. Television, as I implied earlier, serves us most usefully when presenting junk entertainment. It serves us most ill when it co-opts serious modes of discourse, news, politics, science, education, commerce, religion, and turns them into entertainment packages. We must find solutions in how we watch and understand television. There is yet little serious analysis of television as a medium, as opposed to televised content. We need to ask questions about television. Knowing the dangers of a medium reduces how dangerous it is for us. The only way forward, which seems desperate, is to rely on our public schools to teach about this phenomenon. Instead of television controlling education, we may ask how education can control television. Part of the school's task is to help students interpret the symbols of their culture. Huxley knew that there was a race between education and disaster, and that we needed to understand the epistemology of our media in order to survive. Copyright 2025, Books at a Glance. Books at a Glance book summaries are available by subscription only, and except for brief quotes, may not be reproduced in whole or in part without express written permission.